extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kalen Carr, no Matt Doyle on this day. We rotated the squad. Give him a day off.
Kalen Carr? I didn't know Kalen was a kick guy. I thought it was a whole new person in here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw a different basement in Atlanta, and it boggled my mind. This is not the pandemic digs that we became accustomed to. Where's the shag carpet? Where's the paneling?
I've upgraded, guys. I'm sorry. I came down for a wedding this weekend, but my girlfriend's parents' basement is under construction right now, so I had to find an alternate studio. Last time I came down here for like a quick trip at the beginning of the pandemic, I stayed for 5 months. So I had to sign an agreement that I will be vacating tomorrow back to Brooklyn. But I'm here for now.
Per our agreement with your girlfriend's parents, you are not allowed to have natural light of any kind in your studio surroundings. So yeah. This is a legal issue that we're going to have to bring to the courts. We'll see who comes out on top. Big day here from the AT&T 5G virtual studios. We're going to miss Matt Doyle, but we're going to go through week 13 in detail. The best thing we saw, of course, our 22-under-22 player of the year so far presented by Body Armor. We're about a third of the way through the season, so we're going to try to figure out who we think that player is going to be, who it is now, and who will carry on, and who might have the chance to be a candidate down the line. We're going to make Supporters Shield predictions. We are going to tell you who we think is currently in the playoffs, that's going to fade out of the playoffs by the end of the year, who's out of the playoffs and is going to finish inside the playoffs in the Western Conference. Like, all the teams out of the playoffs made the playoffs last year, so that's an interesting question to ask. And then we will try to predict our spoon winner, because it looks like FC Cincinnati will not be defending their dynasty, their three-peat. They will be giving up that spoon this year, fortunately for them, unfortunately for everybody else. Our lead story from week 13 is nobody knows jack about MLS. I mean, there are just some shocking results out there, which is the most shocking we will tell you. We'll go through the rest of them. We will talk to Tom Bogert about Brendan Aaronson and Leeds United and much more as a preview for the transfer window opening not soon, but soonish. And we will talk USMNT ahead of the Nations League games and get into some Kalen Carr love in the mailbag. Should be a good show. All right, let's start with the best thing that you saw from week 13. Kalen, kick it off.
There were a couple good ones. I mean, I liked Dom Dwyer giving the shush to the Nashville crowd. I feel like he's got...
They waited for 4.5 hours for that game.
He's like, all you very dedicated people, go home. Go home sad.
I like Dom. I mean, he was sort of like an antagonist for my Dynamo with the Sporting Kansas City. So I like to see him back to his old tricks. His son actually, I think, did the same celebration as well. So it's kind of like a symmetry. I always like those ones. But I think I'm going to end up going with Sean Johnson post game. He and Shaqiri got into a little back and forth, which Sean did not back down from at all, which I loved. I love the narrative of like some of the like European global stars coming over and like thinking they're going to have, and I'm rooting for Shaqiri, make no mistake about it, for the Fire. But I love the idea of like these guys come to MLS and think that they're going to kind of like walk anywhere they want and say whatever they want to do. And then guys in MLS that are like, you know, lifers coming back and being like, nah, man, like, I don't know what happened in the conversation. I don't know what precipitated it, but Sean is like always the picture of like, cool. It's very hard to rattle him. And he was like, no, not on this case. So Ezra came in and was like, all right, maybe you want to keep it moving.
go. In the grand tradition of Jesse Marshawn, David Beckham. Now we're not taking that noise. We're not taking that noise from you. Look, big win for NYCFC. We'll talk about them, of course, when we talk Shield here in just a little bit. Dave, go off the beaten path. Give us a deep cut here. I know you got one.
Kalen went two, so I'm going to go two. My first will be Orlando City.
Like a list.
Yeah.
It might be a list.
Exactly.
That is a list.
Orlando City being down to 9 men and holding on in Austin to at least a draw. And as a player, I loved the like, oh, there's just balls coming in and coming in. And you could see them sort of getting a comfort zone to the point where Austin wasn't as dangerous as they should have been. And then after, everyone just swarms the ref and it's a whole thing. Oscar Pereja really plays the I'm going to complain to you while calming my guys. So it's like, you can't be mad at me because I'm pulling them away. But you could see him walking away, like, doing this. And Josh Wolf's trying to, like, do his thing. And Pereja gives him the hug, but with the tap behind the head, like, oh, no, I love you. I'm just mad at them. So
You're lucky. You're fortunate to be here. These guys, though. These guys, Joe Dickerson, I'm looking at you. Two hands in the eyes, pointing at you. He's aggrieved in the most, like, I'm trying to think of the adjective.
Respectful
just like,
yes.
Way. Well, something somewhere pleasant in that way.
So that's one, and the other one is I'm all in on the Kerwin Vargas experience. Under 22 initiative signing for Charlotte, comes on, beats his man on his first touch. Lloyd Sam's ready to jump out of the booth to play with him. The crowd's on their feet. Didn't end up scoring, didn't end up having an assist. Sold, all in, let's do it. Every single game, it was so much fun, and it brought life at a time when, you know, I was watching that game, a couple of eyes on a few other games, but I needed a little bit of jolt of energy.
So Kerwin Vargas, U22 signing for Charlotte. They've gotten nothing out of Vinicius Melo. So far, he's not been available for them at all. So it's a good sign for them to get a little bit out of Kerwin Vargas coming over from the Portuguese second division. Here's the caveat for the best thing that I saw in week 13 and literally everything I'm going to say on this show. Took the family down to southern Missouri, to the Truman Lake area, Osceola area, to camp, and then it went biblical, which is fitting for that part of the country. It rained a lot, and we had to move to a hotel in Springfield, Missouri, that's my wooden spoon candidate for cities in the United States. No offense to anyone on this show from or residing in Springfield, Missouri. Maybe you agree with me.
He's looking at you, Kalen. He's talking about you in Springfield,
Missouri. I'm looking out into the ether with sympathy for anyone who is subjected to that life. I'm sorry, Springfield, Missouri, but got some food poisoning and suffered my way through and then was literally comatose on Sunday. So all of this, take it with a grain of salt. I had to catch up on the weekend that was. But the best thing I saw in week 13, Jake Contense over in New England, who hits us up all the time, said, what's the best Revs goal against Cincy? The best thing I saw this weekend were the Legette and Buxa goals. Oh, my God. Just back-to-back, technically brilliant, wonderful team goals. Just sort of finishes that stick in your mind. He has Tommy Mack in here, but I'd put that more on Roman Celentano just not being able to see the ball. It's a good hit. He should save it. So I'm curious what you guys think. I'm going to say that the better of the two goals between Legette and Buxa is maybe I was going to go really like hard here, like very clearly. You would have to be insane if you didn't think, but it's Legette by far for me. I love a good backheel goal, aesthetically beautiful, the rhythm of them, the reaction time you need, just the like creativeness in the finish. But I sort of think, and maybe Kalen, you'd have a better perspective, Dave and I not known to be goal scorers in our men's league days, but it's like more of a reaction. The ball's behind you and you have to figure out a way to sort of drag it and find a way to get it on net. Whereas Legette's is, he sees that ball coming in, you can see time and space matrix style slow down a little bit. He gets those feet, the footwork, gets himself in the right place to scissor across it at an awkward height. For me, the Legette goal is it's so beautiful. And I love the fact that it was DeJuan Jones coming off the left, banging the post. Ball comes back out to Brandon Bye. When the Revs are at their best, it's Bye and Jones flying upfield, providing service. And then Legette going, you know, full Keanu on it to put it in the back of the net. For me, Legette by a mile. What do you think?
I'm with you. I'm going to go with Legette on this one. I almost always would pick a back heel over like a volley or a side volley, but this one was too clean. He caught it like just perfectly. The contact, it was just so pure. You have to really, really throw that. Like you have to actually levitate and get around it. So I'm with you on that one.
I'm the same. So there you go. We all agree on something for the first time. There's a moment.
Anders was very vehemently backheel. So I thought maybe we'd have a debate here.
I think Buxa was, I don't know if it was number one. It was SportsCenter top 10. So that shows you where they stand in Bristol, Connecticut. But there's a moment, one, that DeJuan Jones goal, if it had gone in, I think would have been up for goal of the week by itself. So you have like the excitement, the energy around that. But there's a moment when the ball's coming legit. I think it's when he pumps his back leg where it feels like it all slows down. And then the contact is so clean. The finish is so clean. I stick with you there. And I think it was, I guess you expect the Buxa one from him more than you expect that legit goal.
I'm also going back now. You get a little fist pump from Bruce in the reaction.
Yeah.
Very rare to get that. So I feel like Bruce was really feeling that. And then it actually cuts directly to an FC Cincinnati fan who's just like incredulous, just like pulling his hair. And it's like a really nice sequence. Great camera directing. So I think all of those things you have to take into account in this case.
Yeah, you got to give props to the producer on that one, on the ones and twos, really making the right cuts, giving us the storyline. But a big win for New England in Cincinnati. I wrote before the weekend that among 10 others, that Cincinnati was a team that had something to prove in Week 13. What they're trying to prove is that they are indeed for real. Like, they're actually 2 wins, 4 losses at home now with this loss to the Revs. Had they been able to beat the Revs or just get a result, I think, against the resurgent Tareb teams, I think that would have solidified them more as a true playoff contender, but we'll talk about that more.
They won 4 in a row in MLS. Wasn't 3 of 4 on the road?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying the road is the issue.
No, actually, what I'm saying is in a league,
shock.
No, my point is, in a league where everyone wins at home, you built a gorgeous stadium, you have one of the best fan bases, they march to the game. I don't know if you've heard. What's shocking is that Cincinnati is in the playoffs and for some reason cannot win at home. It is one of the weirdest things in Major League Soccer.
It is extremely strange. By the way, Charlie Davies at TQL Stadium this weekend calling that game. He says it is the best MLS stadium he's ever seen, been in, period.
Wow.
Full stop. So they didn't miss a single thing there. So we got to find a way to get to Cincinnati is what I'm saying. Got to get you guys in the march so that this joke can sort of end its course,
gotta
perhaps, and we can all be a part of it.
Can't knock it till you try it.
Exactly. Exactly. Till you march with those fans.
Some say it's the Springfield, Missouri of marches, but that's just a rumor that's out there.
Yikes. Springfield taking strays. All right, let's get into it. Our 2222 Players of the Weekend presented by Body Armor. We're widening this out. We're going full season. I think the Player of the Weekend has got to be Thiago Almada. Jesus Ferreira didn't start for FC Dallas. New York City FC weren't really at their very, very best as far as goal scoring goes and chance creation goes, though they did win 1-0 against the Fire. Almada had a goal and an assist and a 2-2 draw against Nashville, so I think he'd be the number one. But we're widening the scope here a third of the way through the season. Who is your player that you're going to predict for the end? I mean, it could be the player for now, too, that you think is going to sustain it and go all the way to the end. But who is the 22 under 22 presented by Body Armor Player of the Year so far? And let's double that as a prediction for the full year 2022, Kalen. Who you got?
Jesus Ferreira. I'll take the golden boot leader and the obvious choice. Yeah, exactly. I think when you project forward as well, it's crazy because I don't remember the last time we've had a domestic striker at the top of the golden boot race this far into the season. And then when you project forward and with how much he has at stake on the line going towards the World Cup and trying to get hold on to that number 9 position, I think that's only going to continue to have him searching for goals and hungry for them in a good way. I like the way that this team is set up we saw, incredible goal from Areola this weekend as well. So you have that kind of like dynamic wing play, which fits him perfectly well, and we've seen him successful with the national team, very similar. So 21 years old, leading the line, everything is kind of going his way, DP contract. I think he's. I'm going to just go ahead and get the obvious one out the way for us.
It's been a season that we kind of dreamed up for Jesus Ferreira. I mean, this was the big question mark, is like, how goal dangerous can he truly be? We knew he can be an impact player attacking-wise, but it kind of seemed like positionally, TBD, is he a second striker? Is he a 9? Is he more of like, is he better off the wing maybe? I mean, second striker seemed to be what people sort of agreed on, but he has thrived. And the best thing about it is he's in Berhalter's system. Like with Nico going to FC Dallas, it was the perfect storm for Jesus Ferreira. I would throw out Alan Velasco as another maybe. I mean, he'll be in the 22, I think. He won't be among the winners, but there is more to get from him as well. And if you add that to Paul Arriola, who's been absolutely amazing. I think it's 4 goals in 4 straight games now. I mean, Jesus Ferreira is going to be there. They got him a rest. Franco Jara got the start, but that's a great call. Probably the favorite there. Dave, you want to go out on a limb, or are you going to go chalk once again?
I was told that I had to go chalk here, so I just want it to be known that I'm being
pull back the curtain.
I'm being contained, so I'm going to go Thiago Almada so far.
I thought you were going to say Obed Vargas after you said you had to.
Yeah, true. That would be a little bit more of the puppet master behind the scenes. But no, Thiago Almada, he's the most expensive player in MLS history. He's been good so far, goals and assists. Obviously, one of each in this Nashville game, a really special assist to tie it for them, or second assist to tie it for them in the end. And you can only see him getting better, right? It feels like, one, if Joseph comes back, now his life gets easier, another player for him to set up. But even if not, he gets more use to the team, his teammates, the league, living here. On top of that, Araújo hasn't been available the whole time. I think he's the best player on this team. So his life should only get easier as he's in the team game in and game out going forward. And it's hard. It's one of those things where when we used to do this list, it's like, who could be worth $18 million one day? He already was bought for that number. So he's like already at the top of the list, even just coming into this league.
I mean, the other we just saw Brendan Aaronson sold for $30 million, which we'll talk to Tom Bogert about that here in just a second. What's the
hasn't happened yet.
That's true. I guess it's okay. Tom's. It's like,
No. I think Tom would tell you too. It's going to happen. You can't say it in the past tense.
I thought there was a little bit of report rumor that you were trying to pull on Tom Bogert.
I think Sam Stashkill's eating an Italian sub somewhere, so he's not paying attention.
Gotcha. We can't stand for that. Let's see. I'm going to go Mamadou Fall. It's not quite at this point. I don't think LAFC are atop the support. Well, they are. No. So, Supporters Shield leading LAFC, Mamadou Fall. Starting center back for them, his age profile, his upward trajectory, his ability to be goal dangerous. He's still working out some kinks in the back sometimes as far as decision making goes, but he has a range of passing that's really impressive. He can break lines. He can push the ball forward. He just has a physical skill set that makes him a nightmare, especially if you try to play the ball in behind him. So I think if you have a center back in his age profile with his ability, the track record of being on the best team in the league, which we'll get to in a little bit, I think LAFC will be at the end of the year. It's hard not to look at that player at 22 or 22. It's easy to get sucked into the goals, and I'm as guilty of that as anybody else. Probably one of these guys who are on the attacking side of the ball are going to win this thing, quote-unquote, finish atop the 22 or 22. But do not sleep on Mamadou Fall. He's just scratching the surface, I think.
It's tough because they're conflicting picks, because I think your 42 over 42 is Giorgio Chiellini. So it's hard to see both of them get on their lists, but it'll be interesting.
Who's the presenting sponsor of that?
I don't know. Who would be the presenting sponsor?
Bengay.
Yeah, like the back patches, you just put it on at night. You'll wake up feeling refreshed. You can get up in the morning.
You'd be a good ambassador for that.
That's right. Where's it at, man?
I would. When
you're, for those of us who are 35 but feel like you're 42, icy hot back patches. No free ads. Sorry, we can't do that. What did you think about John Thornton saying this weekend, or maybe ahead of the game, that Chiellini, it's about asking his wife. He's in. He wants to do it, but he's got to get permission from the wife. Again, I feel that. And that they expect him to be a difference maker on the field. So you have, between Mario and you have Mamadou Fall, you have two starting caliber center backs. I know, Dave, you will mention Eddie Segura, but TBD on his recovery from injury, wherever he is in that point in the process.
No, I think it's a guarantee that you're not relying on Segura to come back from an ACL and start, let's just say. Right. The game plan is for them to win MLS Cup this year. That's their belief. That's their goal. I think it's fair to say that Eddie Segura tore his ACL in August of 2021, that he won't be ready to start an MLS Cup or won't be at his highest level on November 1st or whatever the date is for MLS Cup in 2022. So I think it's fair to say we have the cap space to use it. It's more of a guarantee to get Chiellini. Also, I mean, what else would they say besides, like, you're not paying him $1.5 million to be a team leader off the field, and you're not paying him for the future. Like, it's all now or never at the age he's at. So I understand what they're saying. I get the idea behind it. I do think it's obviously a win now play, but teams are built on championships. Win and then figure it out later.
Could be a Shield thing too. I mean, you're just looking at depth and you're looking at quality of depth. I know we didn't play full season for Juventus. But if you got, over the course of the remainder of this season, if you're thinking, okay, we get 15 high-level starts out of him, and we rotate between the other guys, and if we have an untimely injury, we're much more safe than we were before.
You know he's going to get beat over the top in the first game, and we're all going to be like, well, how long does it take for him to settle in? What's the signing going to be?
Well, technically, David Gostarum would tell you that 2023 will be his
He's the Daniel Gosdag of the center backs.
I've been trying to wrestle with this one because I actually got asked about this on Sky, and I shocking. Was sort of taken aback by the fact. At first I shot the rumor down to be like, to MLS, like, I just don't see that happening. And then the report started coming out to say, oh no, this is actually legit. LAFC is after him. And I was actually really even more surprised when I found out who was coming for him, because it doesn't seem like an LAFC type move. One thing they have gone out and done is like, looked for experience all over the pitch and looked for players more from the MLS side that have won trophies in the past and been in successful franchises. I thought part of that was really smart. One, for depth; two, for experience; and three, I think because they have a new manager coming in. I do like the idea of pairing Fall just being so young with somebody of that experience, where I've seen players in the past where in past iterations of MLS where you take a, you know, sort of like a grizzled old vet and you put Bobby Boswell next to Steve Birnbaum and you see one guy has more of the physical attributes and the other guy has more of the sort of cerebral part that's helping the other guy kind of find his
form. The Damian Parnell of MLS 5.0.
I just successfully compared Bobby Boswell to Chiellini. All right, this is extra time. Let's go. But I love that. I understand it from that perspective. That said, like, the only other comp I could think of was Nesta when he came to MLS and he played for Montreal and kind of gave him the business. Hit him with the 1-2. Didn't know what was happening. So I think there is like a little bit of a difference. He was, to be fair, he was playing in Houston in the heat. And it was the second half and I was much fitter at the time. So I just think he ended up coming off the field afterwards too, which was like a sort of a nice little feather
you
in the cap.
You sent Nesta out.
Yeah, sorry. I think he came back and played again. He probably doesn't remember it amongst as he's sitting with his World Cup trophy.
He's probably sitting this week reeling after these comments.
But I think there are like, there is a learning curve for one. It's really difficult. I don't know if he fully understands what's in front of him. I'm sure LAFC would have tried to prepare him as best as you can, but you just cannot prepare yourself for what you don't know. So I think it's a bit of a risk. I'm out on the move overall, but I tried to look at the positives to see like how this could fit with the pieces, but I would, you know, I guess, what does it say about Murillo? Cause are they looking for an upgrade over him? Because you would, or is it Fall that's, you would think Fall would pair with Chiellini, so you have that sort of crossover of different attributes.
Yeah, it feels like a competition thing to me of like, let the best man win, and that's the best thing for their title hopes. Could it also be that Mamadou Fall has interest? He's a 19-year-old center back who has exploded onto the scene. It may be that they're anticipating an offer in the summer that they might not be able to refuse. It may be that Mamadou, we'll ask, you know, we can ask Tom Bogan about this.
Yeah, we should, because if you're going for the trophy, right, then you would try and do a loan back or whatever it was where you sell and you keep them for the rest of the season. Yeah, we should ask Tom though.
We will. How about in this 2020 or 2022 exercise, how about a dark horse or a couple dark horses outside this top three, which I think it's a pretty solid top three of guys that have a good chance to be there. I mean, you can throw Gaga Slonina in there. His recent form has been tough, which he obviously has admitted publicly, but he still has just an incredible sky-high ceiling. I mean, the kid is 17 years old, starting first division games and, you know, not always being his very best, but sometimes being very, very good. So we'll talk to Tom about him too, because I think there's going to be some more to come as far as his future goes at the club level. Dave, I know you always got a guy that you're thinking about. Who might it be?
There's a couple of them. Can I do a list now?
Oh, just I grant you permission in this case to proceed with your list.
So Ismael Kone would be one. Obviously started the year hot, has been injured the last few games, but got the Canada call up. A ton of excitement around him, and I think Montreal will continue to be good. Nathan Harriel, he displaced Oliver Mbaizo, who was starting for Cameroon off and on in World Cup qualifying, African Nations Cup. He is the locked-in starter at that team. And we'll talk to Tom in a little bit, but he's talking about Kai Wagner leaving. Harriel can play on both sides, so I think he should be in that conversation. Anyone who plays for NYCFC technically is in this conversation, but there's specifically like four or five Brazilians and Argentines in the attack, Talis Magno probably being the leader of them. But Cade Cowell, I think this is a name that isn't surprising, but also the way this year has gone, maybe has reemerged. He wasn't getting opportunities in the right spots under Almeida. And since he's left, it's been really good for Cade Cowell. He's finding spots in the game where he should be dangerous. He skinned Ben Sweat like ridiculous towards the end of the game. Last week, he's playing on the wing. Obobisi's making good runs off him. Jamiro Montero looks good. Espinoza's a threat, the opposite side of him. So people have to mark him 1v1. And I wouldn't be surprised if he is playing every game, which isn't always the case for people on these lists. And so he's able to play his way up the list rather than perception or future prospects and all that type of stuff.
Still 18, doesn't turn 19 till October, by the way. I would just reiterate the NYCFC duo of Magno and Andrade. I mean, if indeed Tati gets sold in the summer and he's doing the old song and dance again of talking about how, like, if River came and, you know, Gallardo wanted him, he could never, ever in a million years say no. And, of course, they just sold Julian Alvarez, so maybe they have the funds to make it happen this time, et cetera, et cetera. But if Tati goes, it's not going to be Hebert that plays game in, game out at that number nine spot. I just don't see that happening. I don't think he fits with where this team is now. And I just think off his injury, he still's not back to who he was. I know you're giving me the crazy look, Dave.
He started and scored the game winner this weekend.
It was a PK.
Okay, but he was the center forward who helped them earn it.
Okay, fine. I just think long-term for them to be at their very best, to me, it would be Tyus Magno. So when I think about this team, if Tati goes, you might see Tyus Magno
Front
of a chance creation machine.
Have you ever seen Tyus Magno play center forward and be at his best on the field at that position?
No, but we didn't see that from Tati either.
So in practice, I agree with you, but I do wonder when this all comes to play. And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I wonder if Tyus Magno is continuing to do the things he's doing on the wing and you lose Tati because you sell him. Is it not better off for your team to keep Magno where he's been successful rather than ask him to shift positions while you're losing last year's Golden Boot winner,
Right. You might be right. Here's a question for you. If you're NYCFC and you sell Tati, and you would assume, given their scouting and the algorithm and everything we have already talked about with NYCFC and their ability to identify and acquire players within the City Football Group, do you think if they sell Tati, it's a guarantee they go buy a nine?
No. I think all of the players are on the roster that they feel are necessary to win MLS Cup this year.
Even selling Tati, you don't think they would have in their mind a name, you know, if they think Magno is better at the wing? Because I can see that side of it for you.
I don't think they'll buy Raul Ruiz Diaz type player. I think my point is, I think if they have that nine, it is still with an eye towards the future. It's not to win MLS Cup this year. It's not to replace Tati this year. I think all of the players on the team are good enough to continue on. My guess would be, if they were really going to spend money, it would almost be on a Maxi Morales replacement, maybe at a higher age than an under 22 signing that they've had in the past, to sort of bridge that gap.
Isn't that Santi or Pereira, though?
I don't know that the expectation is that Santi Rodriguez is here long term. I don't think the under 22 guys, the young guys, are guys that are supposed to be here for, what's Maxi been here now, 6 years?
Yeah, he's been the foundation.
Right. So I think I think Thiago Martins was part of that, of like, this is a guy who will be around for a while. I don't know. I think they might make a signing like that in midfield just for the future.
All right, we'll have to see. Going to be a big summer for NYCFC because sure seems like between like Tati and Buxa and others, there's going to be some big sales at some high leverage positions for teams in MLS. And that will affect who we think might win the Supporters Shield. We'll get into more specifics, folks, from week 13 via these conversations. So who is winning the Supporters Shield? This is prediction time. This is not like, you know, no weeby lists here. I know that that's what I'm known for, but I'm just calling it out before we get into it. You got to put your name down. Got to put it in ink. Kalen, who is winning the Supporters Shield in the year 2022?
Oh, God. It's like doing these once in the beginning of the year is bad enough.
We should have had Anders dig up who we said in the beginning of the year, because I'm sure I said LAFC. Maybe I'm wrong.
Did you?
I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty steady on that.
I'm going to go ahead and assume I was wrong.
To be clear, I'm pretty sure everyone picked Seattle.
Did we? Yeah, I think
maybe
I
not to a man, but like I think the majority was.
Yeah, we also didn't know they. We also, this was existing in pre-extra time mode where it was like before we knew that we could possibly win.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of like, yeah, okay.
We were in the cave at the time. We didn't know what was outside of the cave.
We had yet to ascend to this new reality. If I'm looking at it now, you know, a part of me wanted to go towards Nashville because, as like sort of a sneaky pick, because they had played so much on the road in the first half of the year, and I've seen teams and been a part of them as they've kind of like come down the back half. They have been good at home. I don't think they've lost since they've been home. Two draws, I believe, and two wins. They did concede the late goal to Dom Dwyer that I already mentioned I enjoyed. And then that first match, I think it was against Philly at home, where they Andre Blake just like stood on his head and it was insane. So I like that they could make a real run at it. But the problem with them, from my perspective, is the depth, and particularly the depth up front, when their main options have been Ake Loba, all due respect to David Goss and his theorem.
I might be breaking the theorem.
Yeah, it's not really hitting right now. And
not
then,
every individual can break the theorem.
And
back
Zubac.
Up,
so they
back
just,
up.
It hasn't really clicked for them as of yet, as far as that depth piece. And when they depth piece, and then when they went to Houston and they rested Hany Mukhtar and they rested Walker Zimmerman, we saw what happened. So I worry about depth, which is key to the supporter shield. So all that's to say, I'm sticking with NYCFC at this point. And yes, I know there's some risk with Tati potentially leaving, but I have been more encouraged by Eber coming back into form. I don't actually think they need him to do all of the things that Tati does. We can just go back to potentially going to what Eber did well, which is being in the box to finish the action. And I think if they look to add anywhere, it might be more on the outside, looking at that right flank specifically to add some sort of ability to kind of get forward and get that wing play that they've been really good for in the past. So I just think just with the wealth of options, the youth of the team, which I think we've seen a lot of supporter shield winners really rely on some of that youth and energy. They have been able to proven that they can do it in a lot of different circumstances, a lot of different even stadiums. And now they've been back home. Once they've been able to kind of set aside Champions League, we've seen them kind of rise to the top. So I continue to think that that back line, they've only given up one. I think the only team with less goals given up is Philly. But at the same time, I think NYCFC has a lot more going forward as far as their diversity within the attack, at least from what we've seen from Philly right now. So I'm going to lean on NYCFC. That's my case for them.
Do we think Tinnerholm, could he come back this year?
He's supposed to. They say he's on track. The question is, with the way he plays the game, coming off a blown Achilles, how long it takes for him to reach, right? Because he's a monster athlete, covers every inch in the attack. Can he be that guy this year, I think, is a question mark, just overall.
Yeah, and they've got Gray, but I think they might add something there to the mix.
NYCFC right now, 23 points. LAFC leading the Supporters Shield standings on 26. But NYCFC, with a game less played than Philly, Austin, and LFC, were ahead of them on points. So 1.92 points per game right now, with the distraction that was their CCL run to the semifinals as well. 6-1-1 at home. So that's a really good sign. You got to win your home games. You got to be dominant there if you want to win the Shield. And you also have to be better than 500 generally away from home, which is the more difficult proposition. And that's why I'm going with LAFC. They've been good both home and away. Actually, you see them drop points in 3 out of 7 games at home, which is a little bit disappointing, but 4 wins and 6 away from home. And I think with LAFC, it comes down to, for me, one, the underlying numbers, really like them. They have been overperforming by just a tad, but I just don't see them getting the most out of their big pieces yet. They're atop the supporter shield with Carlos Vela being, you know, like basically the worst version of Carlos Vela from a goal dangerous standpoint that we've ever seen in MLS from open play. I know he got one against the Crew this weekend, and he had one midweek as well. So those are good signs, but he's trying to earn this contract. I think, as you said, and I agree with you from the last show, Dave, about what they should do with him. I think that's spot on. You get him, you know what you have, you know that the ceiling can be much higher. Then they have that open DP spot, and they have a big question mark in Brian Rodriguez. Rodriguez missed an open net this weekend. That was disappointing to see. He remains sort of a mystery box, but from a 1v1 perspective, from the ability to change a game, we know he has it. We just haven't seen it consistently enough. So if they can get more out of him, they can get a DP wherever it might be, whether that's like the number 10, whether that's at 9. I still don't think we've seen the best from Chicho Arango either. This is a team that right now is atop the Shield without, in my opinion, playing at their very, very best. And you go back to depth and you go back to youth, just like NYCFC, they have both those things, and they have a ton of MLS experience they brought in at key leverage positions. So I said 2 weeks ago in a column that I think I could see LAFC winning the double. Now, I said that last year, and they missed the playoffs. So take it with a grain of salt. But I would still pick right now, given their ability to improve an already Shield-leading team that's at plus 12 goal differential, by the way, I think LAFC is going to take this Shield in the end. Listen, you want to pick any holes in that?
Well, no one's surprised. So
I did pick, I guess I'm asking you to pick holes.
A week ago, you were like, oh, I don't have a shrine to them. And now you're picking them to win their fourth trophy that you're picking them to win in a matter of a year.
So even if I'm falling, the hole I would pick is if your logic happens and they sell Mamadou Fall and they bring in Chiellini, I can see that back line beginning to fall.
But what if they don't? That was just a guess. What if they don't? What
it
if they
your
have
idea.
A four,
this is your
I know,
plan.
I know, but I'm backing away. If they have a four deep center back pool here that they can just run it. Now, what I will say also to the shrine comment is that LA Galaxy fans are probably begging me to take down the shrine. Like, ever since I built the shrine, quote-unquote shrine, they've been garbage, basically. Yeah.
To Dennis,
so maybe shrines,
shrine.
Yeah, maybe shrines are not what you want here in the Weeby soccer basement.
So, my poking holes in your guys' argument will come through my pick, which is the Philadelphia Union. I think, one, both the teams that you guys picked are still in Open Cup, and you spent how much time talking about NYCFC struggling while having that second competition to play in. Well, what if they continue on in Open Cup play? Philadelphia is not in the Open Cup anymore. They can focus on the one competition. So I think that's an advantage to Philly in terms of Open Cup run. In terms of home and away, they've gone and beat Montreal in Montreal. They went and beat NYCFC in away. They went and drew at LAFC. I'd say they only have three games away still against what you'd call top teams. And one of them is New England this weekend, when New England has to play midweek in Open Cup and Philly's off for the week. I just think when you look at this season, clearly from the points per game so far, there are not bottom teams that are going to be give me points over the course of the season. I don't think anyone's breaking 70 points. Like, this is going to be a lower point total than what we've seen. And so Philly grinds it out. There are a lot of ties. Well, the ties become wins for them. They don't become losses. That's not been Philly's case over the last few years. And so if there's a year where they can continue to grind out results, NYCFC, fantastic. What happens when it gets tough for these young players who have never carried a team before and Tati's gone? So I understand Maxi Morales is still there. On the flip side for LAFC, we've seen the holes in their team over the last year and a half. And I look at a Philadelphia team, they're three deep at center back. They've got options at fullback. Leon Flock can play nine positions. And all of this is without getting any production from their number nine DP that they brought in to be better. And so for me, Philly stands right now 2 points out of the Shield race. 2 points behind the Shield race on top of the Eastern Conference. They will continue to get better, and they are the one team that I think knows what the contest takes. They know what the situation calls for. They've been here before. They've got the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer to keep them afloat when things get tough. And so that's why I'm picking Philly.
Nobody's lost fewer games so far than you. Just one. Six wins, six draws. What'd you see from them this weekend in Portland?
Well, they needed a goal. They needed to start scoring so that the game could become a little bit easier for them. And they did that. And I actually thought they were a little bit more open than I expected after that first goal. But it led to more opportunities for them. And I think Jim was able to set them up so that they were able to create more chances. The game was more open and it was easier in a different way. For them, but they're still bend and don't break. And when you get into the final third defensively, I thought Jose Martinez was everywhere, including in Diego Chara's face, which was my favorite part of the game, including complaining to the ref 7 seconds into the game, which is when you should start complaining, because you'll never get a yellow card if that's the way you handle it.
Is he like a little bit more demonstrative, the Eastern Conference Chara, like in the sense?
Well, he could
break Diego's foul record potentially,
but he would be higher on the yellow card list than where Diego Chara is for sure.
He doesn't do it with a smile, so his yellows come out.
Repertoire, yeah,
yeah. But he's elite. He covers his spot incredibly. Bedoya was really good in this game as well, finding the openings, finding the gaps. And Sergio Santos is not the player that's going to lead you, but if he gets hot, he'll stay hot for a little bit. That can carry you for a time when, you know, Carranza isn't scoring or Gazdag somehow potentially maybe takes a step back for a few games. Santos is the type of guy who can sort of carry you in those moments. And so I think it was really good for them to see him get a goal.
They haven't scored more than 2 goals in a game all year. And they're so good defensively that they can win. You know, 2 goals is generally enough for 3 points, and even 1 most of the time. I do worry about, just when you look at kind of the territory where they are based in the table. And when you play tighter matches like that, one or two draws can go the other direction. So I worry a little bit about whether if they can get, similarly, the way we've talked about before with them, if they can get a little bit more production, and part of it is like, we saw this with the Revs though last year, where they scored more goals, but they often, I think at a lot of times, they won a lot of really tight games as well and defended on that back line. So I don't know. I hear the case for Philly. I think they could be a sleeper as well. I mean, as sleeper as you can be in second in the East when they've been at the, and they won the Supporters Shield not long ago, but yeah, I don't know. I think I would still lean towards LA. I also would say this.
Now, it might be different about NYCFC. I think if it comes down to the end of the season and they are in the running, let's say, against LAFC, LAFC will keep, I think, their horses ready for a cup run because they've won Supporters Shield. Where Philly, if they are in a cup, if they are in a race for any trophy, they're full in for that.
You think so? Given that they won the Shield? Given that the whole question is getting done the playoffs?
It's not, though. It's the Philadelphia Union. They are a lower-spending team. It is winning trophies. It's winning stuff when you have the opportunity. That's where I think Philly stands versus maybe some other teams where they are focused on specific trophies.
And where do you feel NYCFC falls in that category? Because they just won MLS Cup.
Yeah, that's why I said I don't know about NYCFC.
One thing I would point out with Philly is like that line they walk at home so far has been 3 wins, 4 draws, which is sort of what we were saying about Nashville as well. Of like, hey, you got to get more wins than draws at home. Basically, you got to pick up 3 points as often as possible in order to win the Shield. We will see. Let us know who you think. Let's quickly go through the team that's currently in the playoffs that we think is going to finish out. Kalen, who you got? Who's going to drop out?
Oh, why do you keep coming to me first,
man? Well, it's on the list. I can go to Dave. You want me to
go first? No, I got it.
I'll go first, okay. Kalen. Come on.
All right. Take one off the list, please.
I'll say Charlotte first. It's an easy one. They're the last team in right now. Not really a knock on them. I think they're going to continue getting better as a team. But one, I had to pick one. And two, there are clear holes in their team. And there are teams below them that I believe will continue to get better or continue to improve in the season, mainly the New England Revolution.
Look, and if you're going on points per game, Atlanta would rise above them right now, and so would the Revs. But Charlotte, with 13 games played, jumps up. They have had a great start at home. That's really fueled them. They've been pretty poor away from home. Not a big shock for an expansion team. We'll see what they do in their transfer window as well. But I agree with you. I see them dropping out. We're going to give Kalen another second. This is going to break my heart. I'm sorry, Cincinnati. I just don't see it over the course of an entire season. There's too much reliance on Lucho and on Brandon Vasquez. And I don't see it. Not with the back line, not with 21 goals allowed. They're playing on a really, really like thin knife edge. And I give all the props in the world to Pat Noonan for, instead of saying like, you know what, we're going to pack it in. We're going to be super defensively responsible. We are going to be stout and we're not going to give up chances. He was like, nah, F that. We're getting after it. We're going to go try to score goals. We're going to be an exciting team to watch. We're going to make it fun to tune into Cincinnati games, but sometimes it's going to be, we're going to sacrifice a little defensive stability. And I don't know, maybe they're not sacrificing that much because the back line is still a big TBD for me. So I think Cincinnati, though it has started well, probably is going to have a fade down the stretch, in particular, just because I think teams will either figure out how to mark Lucho or will just start kicking him even more. And if he's not chance creating, I don't know where it comes from for them.
Sidebar, I like Mwabodo. I think that was a good signing. I'm excited to watch him continue as their six.
They need that on the back. They need back that at center back and probably at fullback as well, too. But TBD. So Kalen, Cincinnati, I apologize to you.
Well, I'm sort of regret to agree with Goss on the Charlotte pick. That said, I would say they are still a team very much in flux. They just added Shinyashiki. I think they're still figuring out exactly who's been really good, but they're still figuring out exactly how their pieces fit. And then May actually, as we know, Miguel Angel Ramirez will go out and advocate maybe for some more signings at some point. So I think that could happen. I feel better about Cincinnati. I actually feel pretty good about putting them. They look like a playoff team to me. I hate to do this. I'm going out to the West, and this pains me.
Don't do it.
But I'm taking my Dynamo.
Wow. Wow, traitors among us.
Wow. Oh, Dynamo.
I mean, it's, I hate to do it, but I mean, they're seventh right now, but I mean, it's really tight right around that area. But the problem is really the way I look at it. Nashville is just one place above them. I mentioned how I think they're going to be able to actually really climb the second half of the season with all those home games. You go down below and you see Seattle Sounders, who I think we all expect to get above the line. I'd say the same thing about the Colorado Rapids at this point. And when I just look at the Dynamos, it's honestly, they got a huge result this weekend away against the Galaxy, which I feel like anytime I see the Dynamo beating the Galaxy, I just feel great, immense pride and like this kind of like vanquishing of the demons.
And not just beating them, just whooping them. Like, oh, smashing them.
Yeah, I mean, they're have Galaxy. I just reeling in existential crisis mode, which is my favorite version of the LA Galaxy. Actually, I'm a little bit worried about them staying above the line. I didn't pick them just because they're a little higher up the table, but
shut up.
I wouldn't be surprised after what we've seen the Galaxy do in years past. Show that it seems like they got it figured out, and then oh no, here comes those backline problems again. But the Dynamo actually is their home form, the inconsistency at home that has caused me to question where I've seen them generally be so much stronger. They're a little bit better on the road now with two wins on the road, which is rare for my Dynamo even in my days. But the home form really hasn't been as consistent in the past. I still think they're the third best team in Texas behind Dallas and Austin. Now I'm just piling on.
Wow, Kalen.
Whoa. But I think it'll be tight for the Dynamo, but when I just look at Seattle,
it kind of feels like he's enjoying this.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. But trust me, I've suffered, man. I'm in the fire. It's been dark days over the past years. But I like the direction that Nagamura is going with the group. But they've made some mistakes even on the road as far as simple stuff like set pieces, defending, defensive errors and mistakes, red cards even at times. So I think there's still a work in progress. They're definitely, to be where they are right now is a huge improvement from where they were, say, even just last year. So they're on the right track, but I just worry a little bit with the Sounders and Colorado behind them right now creeping up towards the back half of the year.
Maybe even Minnesota with the talent they have. Let's go positive note, because Dynamo did have a 3-0 away win at LA this weekend. Houston Arrow hit us up and says, I'm excited for the Dynamo right now. I had one win on the road over the last two seasons. We're already at two with convincing wins. Sebas is on 8 goals plus assists over the last 8 games. Quintero seems revitalized. Thor got off the mark. Watch out for him. And we finally got production from our wingers, plus Ace is coming. Better goal this weekend. Thor Jofarsson or Mario Balotelli. Step over, magicians.
The Rabona finish makes it tough.
Yeah, the Rabona finish is filthy. But Thor had a goal, man. That was a sick goal. And Sebas embarrassing Jonathan Bond was also a joy. A little chip over the goalkeeper. That was Carlos Vela against the Quakes-esque.
Well, Weeby, I want to fill you in because I know you and the Golden Throne at home were probably stuck together at the time. But Thor literally misses a sitter about 45 seconds before this goal. That is class that you cannot teach. Like Corey Baird breaks through two defenders. He plays it to Sebas Ferreira in on the right side. Ferreira makes the right play. He puts it across the box to Thor. Thor takes a terrible touch with the outside of his right foot, bangs the shot over the crossbar to make it 2-0 or 3-0, whatever it would have been at that point. 2-0, I think. And it's like, really, man? Like, this is the thing you were brought here for. You're supposed to be a finisher. And then like a minute later, he does that. And that's all anyone will remember. That is true form. At the same time, Mario Balotelli has probably tried that 100 times in an actual game and not scored. So
it's the same stadium that Mario Balotelli attempted a backheel goal from, was it on a PK and got subbed out? I believe it's the same stadium.
Well, it's the same spirit, actually, that it takes. You can't score one without missing the other. Like the same mentality that shows that you just do not. It doesn't really matter that much. You know, I don't know how else to put it. It's just there's a freedom to that can create the sort of beautiful side as well as the absurdity. It actually reminded me, the Thor goal reminded me a little bit of the Ariel Lassiter goal from the week from Inter Miami over Red Bull, where he kind of cuts it and he's almost going away from goal. Thor hit it even better. But the idea to kind of like cut, you're moving back and to get that kind of power on a shot where you're going away from your own, from the target is even more impressive. So it was good to see him get off the mark.
Let's give Tyler Pascher a little bit of credit too. All three goals in this game for the Dynamo were special. Tyler Pascher absolutely nailed one. Go check out the highlights from there. Big win for the Dynamo. Things are getting better. Ache Ache coming. There is a chance it could stay above the line, but they got some monsters. They're out of the playoffs behind them in the West. A bunch of playoff teams from last year currently below the line, which brings us to the team currently out of the playoffs that will finish in. And we've taken Seattle off the board because that's far too easy. I'll get us started here. I think Colorado Rapids is a really easy choice. In this spot. I don't think we've seen them at their best between CCL and everything that's happened to them over the last couple of weeks with travel and adversity. I just trust Robin Fraser, and I trust this squad. They do have a question mark as to what they do when Austin Trusty leaves. Got the center back from Cincinnati that's going to fill
sort
in.
But they played without him this week.
Yeah, I think they'll be fine. I'm just saying he's been in that team for a long time through their success so
also,
far.
Also, do we know he's leaving?
I don't know, man.
Is he starting for Arsenal next year?
It's true. He's not. So he's going to be alone somewhere. Maybe it's back to the Rapids. I don't know. It'd be disappointing for him. I don't know. We'll see on that one. But I think at the end of the season here, the Rapids will be comfortably above the playoff line in the Western Conference. To me, they're better than the Galaxy. They're better than Houston. They might be better than Salt Lake, who are sort of, you know, riding emotions and a prayer sometimes. But I trust the Rapids, and I trust Robin Fraser. So I see them getting back above the line with Yassi and Rubio. Up there producing for them up top. How about you, Dave?
Well, I was supposed to go third because it makes mine more realistic because you guys took the other ones off the board. But I'll go second based off how you chose to do this. I can't pick Colorado because you did. You told us that we can't pick Seattle. So that was another big one, an obvious one. I probably should have chosen the Revs, but I went bold. And I went with the Chicago Fire. I like what I see with Jairo Torres in the team. I like what I see with Chris Mueller in the team. I'm not worried about the Gaga Slonina issues. One, because I do think they have other options if they have to. Either way, I think defensively the structure is sound for them. Chios has been impressive, and it'll take the pressure off them when these guys are fit and scoring and clicking. Listen, it's not my money. I don't have to pay Shakir. It doesn't matter how much. I do think he's an elite player in Major League Soccer. I just don't think he can do it by himself. That's what was asked of him over the first month and a half, 2 months of the season. Maybe other guys have done it. That's great. But I think we're going to start seeing the best of him. And as I said, I don't think there's a bottom team. So I think it's just going to be teams trading punches back and forth over the course of the end of the season for basically half of the Eastern Conference. And I believe that the Chicago team has enough talent to get out and make it into that seventh spot.
If you are at the end of the season seeing the Chicago Fire above the playoff line, you go straight to David Goss and you give him all the props in the world because that's a ballsy pick.
Someone has to pick there. Someone.
Yeah, they're down there at the very bottom of the Eastern Conference on 11 points, 0.85 points per game. They're actually at the bottom of the Supporters' Shield standings right now, Dave. I want to make sure that you understand these things as you make this choice.
Yeah, but they're also 5 points out of the playoffs today. 5 points. What's 5 points? It's nothing.
That's true. It's nothing. Yeah. It's nothing. What's five?
I like the positivity.
Yeah, me, you, and
Kaelin,
Ezra. Man.
I got you.
We're taking shots. Okay.
You're dunking on your old teams. I got it. Someone's got to carry them back up.
I will say this. I will say that they'll probably make more signings in the summer. That's what they're saying. Probably go back to the wing. The George Heights experience in Chicago hasn't exactly been wonderful so far. David and Skokie hit us up about that. So I would have, he says, he asked if the David Goss theorem applies to GMs. So I would have some question marks about whether or not they make the right moves in the summer to get them over the
so
top.
So on the David Goss theorem for GMs, can I do that real quick?
Go ahead.
It depends on what the team looks like. Basically, you have to base it on when is it their roster the first time. So, for example, this isn't Chris Albright's roster.
This is his roster.
No. I'm saying this isn't Chris Albright's roster. At the same time, we gave Garth Augerway credit, I think, when it maybe wasn't his roster yet, when Seattle started winning. So it goes both ways, but you have to sort of target a moment when enough of the roster is clean that they were able to make their moves and to see the team that they chose to put together. I agree with you about George Heights is what I'm saying. But that's the way I would read it. It's not year one, year two exactly. It's more if someone takes over a team and everyone's on 3 or 4 year contracts. You know, Pat Onstad didn't really have a lot of choices he could make about the Houston Dynamo this year. So I wouldn't say next year, if they're not in the top half of the Western Conference, that I'm already judging what they've been able to do.
Okay. Why are players not allowed the same sort of forgiveness when it comes to the David Goss theorem?
Well, one,
just the GMs get time where it's their roster. What if I want a different manager? What if I want a new manager coming in?
So if for a player to get better, now I got to change the whole roster around them. That feels like a lot of work for one person. Also, come on, Kalen, careers are fleeting. You never know what will happen.
Get it done.
I'll take
it. All right. Who's your team out of the playoffs right now that's going to finish in, Kalen?
I've got Atlanta. I just think too much talent. There's, you know, they've lost so much talent, but you see the way that they've still been able to withstand and kind of continue to move forward. I think also you're seeing Araujo, Almada, Moreno, Cisneros even has been able to get goals. So just a lot. They've got to figure out the sort of back line situation, but I think they have some options there to play with. So I just think when you look at the Eastern Conference, I'm a little more concerned actually about New England still, as far as some of the where they're at in the standing below. I find it really fascinating that nobody's chosen them, at least to this point, as the team that's going to get above. But I could see Atlanta jumping Charlotte, even though they haven't quite beat them in the head-to-head match at this point, or even Cincinnati or one of the other teams as well. So I'm picking Atlanta as my team to on the outside, but very close and most likely going to get in.
I mean, I trust New England too, and I would go there. They just have, you're losing Matt Turner, you're losing Adam Buksa, you already lost Tejon. I know you got Barreros in, but it's not going to be like same impact immediately. I think that's pretty clear. I just wonder if Bo is not healthy. Josie hasn't been able to, he hasn't been healthy, hasn't been able to get it done so far either. There are a lot of question marks when it comes to the top end talent outside of Carlos Hill right now for New England.
Best fullback there in MLS though.
So. Dude, they are so fun to watch.
They're awesome.
Oh my god!
Although Don Bodgy got his shoulder to the end line this weekend, which I was shocked by.
All right, let's quickly, because we don't want to pour salt in the wound. Give me your spoon winner here prediction. I don't think there's a FC Cincinnati bad team in this league. I mean, they're 3-time spoon winners. They were way like 0.7 points and below all three of their first years.
That type
in MLS.
Of dynasty, that type so of I, excellence takes time to build.
Yeah, well, actually, it doesn't take any time to build. I mean, it's like immediate for Cincinnati. But I don't think that's going to happen this year. Right now, you have 13 teams within 5 points of spoon position, to go to your point about Chicago and the playoffs. Dave, I mean, 13, fully half the league within a result or two of spoon territory. I'm going to go Inter-Miami on this one, even though right now Inter-Miami are up in 10th. They are 4 points out of the spoon. I think you got to look for a team that over the course of the season is going to have like a bottom fallout moment, and we've already sort of seen that at times for Inter Miami, or at least through the way that Phil Neville has talked about it. And I also don't think that they have the roster flexibility to go make any big moves in the summer to really reinforce the team, between the sanctions that they have and all the other things. You've already seen them have to basically turn this whole thing over. So if Leo Campana gets hurt, or Leo Campana stops scoring, or Gonzalo Higuain, despite having a moment or two where you're like, oh, he's into it this weekend, checks out, or if Gregore gets hurt, or if there's a result that goes south on them and the vibe changes, I just don't think that they have the depth, and I don't think they have the ability to change the squad. I could be wrong. Chris Henderson could be listening to this being like, you moron, we actually have XYZ lined up. It feels like they're a team that is going to be susceptible to bad vibes. And once bad vibes get a hold of you, sometimes they drag you all the way to the bottom. So Miami is going to be my choice here, despite the fact that they're in 10th in the Eastern Conference right now. And they just won at home against the Red Bulls, which is crazy because the Red Bulls don't lose on the road, but they lost at Miami, which is bizarre. And I also think this is maybe the clashiest game in the history of Major League Soccer. The pink and the red.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Hideous.
Brutal to watch.
It was ugly. It was just the worst. Like, just watching the game on like the highlights, because obviously I was, I was laid out. Thank you, Springfield Mo. I was like, oh God, who could watch this? This is terrible. Just awful. So Miami's going to be my choice. Who you got, Kalen?
I'm going to go with Vancouver. It's just, I mean, even this past weekend, which, you know, I think they I know they got a draw on this one, right? It was against Sporting Kansas City.
Who, was Vancouver?
Oh, no, they lost to Charlotte. Sorry. Yeah, and wait, this was also the match where they didn't have a goalkeeper, is this right?
They started Max Anker, who they signed to an MLS Next Pro deal this week because he was their backup in MLS Next Pro on an academy deal last week. And, yeah, they only lost 2-1. Well,
yeah, but it feels like it's been one blow after the next for them as far as, like, the health and safety protocols that hit the team. Then it was the, you know, they had injuries before that. The back line doesn't look the same. They've tried to sort of adapt. And it just feels like they've lost a little bit of that sort of magic, right? I don't see Sartini being able to kind of bring that same sort of back half energy that he had last year. And I thought there might be a challenge beginning a whole new season from the start than just sort of taking over at the end and trying to will this team more maybe on vibes than anything. That's credit to them. They did really well towards the back half of the year, but it seems like the wheels have kind of fallen off and they're falling pretty far behind. It's still tight, but I had to pick somebody and I felt like Vancouver, with just the kind of bad luck that they've had even at this point, and maybe we've seen moments from Cavallini, but not consistent enough. And then you also have Brian White, who was kind of like really the one that carried them through those large stretches of last season. And through injuries or absences, he hasn't been able to find that same form yet. So maybe that's the hope for them if he's able to get going. But as of right now, it's not been good for Vancouver.
Just the Andiamo vibes were just, they were everything to me for so long. I hope that's not the case. I hope Vanny gets it turned around. I hope they get healthy. I hope that Max Anker knows that he has one of the best names in all of sports. Dave, what's your spoon pick?
I'm going to go with SKC, which is a pretty big roundabout for me because I picked Johnny Russell to be MLS MVP preseason. I think I had them second in the Western Conference. But I just, you talked about being able to improve. They signed all their under 22 player initiative players this offseason. They have two DPs that are out that they can't replace at a DP level. I just don't see how it changes from a roster composition point of view. And with what they have out there, it just doesn't feel like they have enough to turn the tide. Obviously, Peter Vermees, of all the teams we're talking about, right, and all the coaching staffs and whatever, he has the most trust of any of them. And so it's why I find it hard to believe. But when you look at the roster compositions of teams, when you look at the way things have gone, to lose 7-2, I mean, it's just stuff that you wouldn't really expect. We also spent some time talking about tanking last week, I think, and what it would look like. Daniel Shalloway's in the last year of his contract. They don't have an option, my understanding is, after this year. Jackson Mendez, baby. Trade Shalloway and whatever you need to get Jackson Mendez in. Let him be just a ball-winning monster for your team for the next 5 years. And he doesn't even start in
Orlando.
Wouldn't
you just try to re-sign Shalloway and then trade allocation for Jackson Mendez?
Maybe. I don't know.
Given their recent history of scouting, I don't think you could just let Daniel Shalloway.
Well, the thing with Shalloway is, one, do you think he's on his ceiling coming off last year? And then two would be Pulido's back. You have Sonis. You have Johnny Russell. Right? It's not going to work this year. Is Shalloway a locked-in starter for you next year if it does? Whatever. I'm just making up fake rumors. The reality of it is they have a hole in central midfield. Their old Cam Duke started at center forward this weekend. He started at right back on Wednesday night. This is how bad it has been for them. And I'm a little bit worried.
I also don't understand how Sonis not starting. I think Peter thinks he doesn't run enough off the ball, which if you look at talented attacking players in SKC's system and wonder why they're not starting, that's a pretty good top spot to go to of like, okay, well, why is this guy not starting? Well, watch him off the ball. Does he run enough to keep the shape defensively? Does he put guys under pressure? Does he make off-ball runs? I just think they got to find a way in this season to get some positives for the future. And he looks like one of the few guys that can create on his own and is goal dangerous. So I don't think Kansas City is going to finish in that spot, but I guess we shall see. Let's run through some other big matches from the weekend and then get to Tom Bogert on Brendan Aaronson, as well as talking a little Jesse Marsh in Leeds. Maybe we've got Selena as well. We'll ask about Mamadou Fall and then get to the mailbag, which is all Kalen Carr love. What do you think about Montreal RSL? RSL go on the road. RSL, according to Trey Fitzgerald, who was the PR maven over there, 4 points off Shield pace despite 8 games played away, 26 players used, 90-plus games lost to injury, 4 of the next 6 and 6 of the next 9 at the Riot, which is actually rocking now, starting Saturday against Houston on the road. Savarino arrives Tuesday. Krylock back soon. Big-time vibes for RSL, who go to Montreal and win 2-1. That's a big, big win for
them. Come back to win 2-1. They gave up a goal in the opening minute of this game. I didn't think they got blown off the field, but I didn't think that they were good in the first half, and they bounced back in the second half. It was sort of everything Pablo talks about, different ways that it can happen. You get You get Justin Glad off a corner kick header, and that sort of opens the game up for them.
He looks like you remember when he was like, you know, had like, sorry, Kalen, had Kalen Carr's body type back in the early days. Just like, just all limbs. Just all limbs.
Man,
it worked for you, Kalen, because you weren't trying to get like into people. You're trying to get around them. You know what I mean? But
don't try to play nice.
That Justin Glad looks like he's been in the weight room for like 5 years.
It's really tough too, because Kalen's actually in Atlanta for a trial at center forward to fill in at that position. You just hurt his confidence.
These knees would not last a minute on that turf.
Anyway, big win for RSL. Georgi Mihailovic, another goal, minute in. Little finish there. Looks a little like Frank Lampard arriving late in the box. Miami 2, Red Bull 0. Again, the clashiest of wins for Inter Miami, but they will take whatever they can get at this point. To win at home against the Red Bulls is actually a huge accomplishment. They got it done in this game. Red Bulls still have question marks as to who's going to be the person, people, etc., putting the ball in the back of the net, because they got the talent, but seems like the results are a little bit wonky for them at times. Minnesota go on the road and beat Dallas. Paul Airola with a big goal, but Robin Lud gets his sixth. He's 10th in MLS on that number. He scored 5 in the last 7 games, and he is now the Loons' all-time leading goal scorer in MLS play with 22. Wow. That's pretty incredible. That's a big win for Minnesota, so congratulations to the Loons. Austin Orlando. This one probably deserved more time. Orlando fans are pissed. They do not like the refereeing calls that they believe went directly against them in this game. Two handballs on Rigo Schlegel in rapid succession with Orlando up 2-0. That sees Schlegel get sent off. Cesar Araujo with the red card on video review for violent conduct. I don't think any doubt about that one, but especially upset about the corner kick late on that led to Musa Gite's equalizer. I'm with them on that. It doesn't look to me, absolutely did not hit an Orlando player, in my opinion. Did you have a feeling, Dave, on the handballs? Did you think it was cruel?
No.
The two yellow cards?
No. I just think it's one of those where it's like the reality of the game you wish wasn't that way, but it is what it is. That's how I felt. But also, I don't have any skin in the game. So I can understand.
Yeah.
I can understand feel like what I talked about with Poppy in the beginning of the show. Like, you can understand the feeling aggrieved because you look at it and you say, well, now why is it 11-9? Like, we haven't done anything wrong in reality. So I could understand that part.
Maybe 11-10.
Come at on, the time, but Cesar, I'm just saying.
Post Cesar Araujo is, yeah, for sure. And then the corner kick is just sort of a poke in the eye, I think, for them. Remember, that's not video reviewable. And I also think there is some scar tissue, let's say, with Orlando from last season and seasons previous when it comes to some referee calls that they thought definitely went against them. But a big draw for Austin, but still a lost opportunity. They were sort of getting played off the field there for about 60 minutes until Orlando went down to 9 men. How about Nashville Atlanta? This was a tough one for Nashville, I thought. Big draw for Atlanta, but Nashville sort of gave this one away a little bit. I mean, certainly the first goal Joe Willis gives away. But that's going to be a match that Gary Smith looks back on and says, dang, we should have had 3 from that one. LAFC go to Columbus and win. We didn't mention Columbus in the spoon conversation, but we probably should have.
It just feels like they're too talented. We think they're going to make a DP signing at the number 9 position. It sounds like it's going to be a high level one as well, but I think they're the most plodding, methodical team in the league, and it doesn't create chances. It's so slow that by the time they find the openings, it's normally closed down.
All right, let's get to Tom Bogert. Talk a little Brennan Aaronson and Leeds, as well as Jesse Marsh's big celebration. And I don't know if you call it a miracle, but maybe it felt like one for Leeds fans. All right, let's bring him on, Tom Bogert. What's up, Tom?
What's going on, Weeby? How are you?
Good, good. Always a wonderful day when I get the the wood grain behind you, the paneling. Is it, you know, Kaylin doesn't have it anymore, but you will always have it. So that's a wonderful part of my life.
Are you in my girlfriend's parents' basement? Where are you, man? Amazing.
How many? I love that. He's like, no, I'm not. I'm
Jersey. That was a grenade that I wasn't jumping on. There's no funny way to answer.
Yeah, I was going to say, watch out for the guy with a mustache. Mr. Steal Your Girl.
Are you in my girlfriend's parents' basement?
Are you downstairs?
Okay. Oh, man.
Let's move on.
All right, tell us, Tommy Scoops, about this Brendan Aaronson business. It seems like very good business for everybody involved.
Yeah, man. So Brendan Aaronson, they had Leeds and Red Bull Salzburg agreed the framework of the deal, you know, a while ago. They've been working on this for a long time, pending their relegation or Premier League safety. So Brendan Aaronson will be joining Leeds United now that they're confirmed avoiding relegation from the Premier League, in a deal that's worth around $30 million plus a little bit in incentives. Yeah, so it's definitely a good deal, I think, for all involved. It's a very big price. I'm doing the numbers right now. Depending on if Weston McKennie's incentives hit or not from the Juventus transfer, I think he's the second most expensive American player of all time.
Do you think Brendan? How deep are your sources here? How did Brendan watch this Leeds United final day match in the Premier League?
I don't have any sources on that. I'd imagine he was rooting very hard. I know that people at the Philadelphia Union were big Leeds United fans on Sunday.
What do you think they'll do with the money? Is there any indication on that side? I mean, there's a lot of income for them between, you know, Aaronson and Mark McKenzie. Does this make it more likely they go out and spend a big number? I know they went out and spent not huge, but fairly large on Ura. What does this do for their club?
Yeah, I wouldn't kind of deduce it down to that in terms of this. Hey, this is, you know, $5 million more that they could spend. Like, they look at this as the investments that come into the academy, that this helps pay for a year or two, 3 years, whatever it is in terms of the finances for the academy. So yeah, I wouldn't equate it necessarily to that they're going to spend big transfer fees. But again, they, you know, Mikel Ura was what, $2.5-3 million? Like, that was a club record transfer fee this winter. Like, that stems from the original Brendan Aaronson deal, the Mark McKenzie deal, and everything else that comes from club generated transfer fees.
When I was looking at the transfer fee at $30 million, when I think about, like, I know it's not a direct from MLS transfer fee, which changes things, but the numbers even to the Premiership, it was Almiron was, I think, at about $30 million. Mm-hmm. I think what Alphonso Davies was 20 plus, around 20-ish to go
22, assuming all incentives hit.
Okay, I guess. At just like looking at that number, did that strike you as a little bit higher than you expected? Or is that just kind of basically what the market indicates for someone who's coming from, you know, playing for Salzburg, or like, if you compare it to, like, not just the MLS comps, but I guess just sort of the market in general, is that a fair number?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big fee, and there are a lot of factors that go into this. Like, look, Premier League clubs can afford that number. Like, it is pretty wild, the money that goes around the Premier League. This is a team that avoided relegation by a point or 2 points, whatever it ended up being, and there's no question that they can afford a $30 million transfer just because of the TV money and everything else in this league, rather than, say, other leagues that, you know, really only the top four or five, if that, could afford, you know, a $30 million transfer. Again, it is big, but with the context of Leeds had a $20 million bid rejected in January. I believe they had a $25 million bid rejected in January. So it makes sense that the fee ended up climbing to 30, that it was agreeable for all parties. Again, look, like, Salzburg weren't, like, actively shopping him. They didn't 100% kind of acquiesce to the idea that he was leaving. This was such a good financial deal for them, A, that they couldn't really pass up, and B, they wanted to work with Brendan Aaronson. He really wanted to go to Leeds. So if they got relegated and this deal went off, there's no guarantee that he would have left before the World Cup, just because how many other teams can really afford $30 million, and who would be as good of a fit for Brendan Aaronson than Leeds United with Jesse Marsh? And again, he's been a long-term target. He was there when Bielsa was the manager. Bielsa really wanted him for the relegation fight. So this is just kind of a perfect confluence of a great price and a great situation.
Wonderful stuff from MLS. David Goss still having a lot of trouble.
It's funny, but I mean, it's not that funny.
I didn't mean for it to be funny.
I've been crying for the past 5 minutes. Just continue on. You guys are good. You're doing
great.
Yeah,
I've been trying to answer these questions super seriously as Goss is literally under his desk, and I can just see his back kind of moving because he's laughing still.
Oh, boy.
This guy's gone.
All right. Let's talk some other targets and look ahead to the summer here. Gago Salinas has not had his best. he hasn't put his best foot forward, let's say, but I don't think that's going to dampen interest in him. He's a 17-year-old. He has this huge ceiling. Tell us what you know about how things have sort of coalesced around him, what the Fire might be dealing with this summer, and what might be in Gago Sanina's future.
Yeah, there are a ton of teams that are still very interested in him. Big clubs, there's a lot of Premier League teams. The latest reporting has been coming out. Like there was something that came out the other day that said Wolves were closing in on a deal for Gago Sanina, and I was told, you know, categorically that the Chicago Fire have not received a bid from Wolves. I can confirm that Wolves are definitely among the teams that are very interested. That's absolutely a potential landing spot, but you know, to say that something was close would be a little premature. Something else came out, I think today in England, in terms of reports that they're trying to get, you know, like a £3 million or £4 million. Like, I don't know any specifics there, but I'd be really surprised if that was the whole deal. Like, I'd imagine that there's going to be a lot of incentives or whatever, and a loan back clause or however they need to word it. That I'd be really shocked if he doesn't at least finish the season here in Chicago. When Chelsea were talking with Chicago about a potential deal, or talking with Slonina's camp, it would have been a 2-year loan back to MLS, so he would have been here not just for the rest of this season, but also for next season. Obviously, that deal got off the table and complicated with, you know, Chelsea's ownership situation. So, you know, maybe they revisit that at some point in the summer. But yeah, there's a lot of TBD here. The market's heating up. He's likely to be the most expensive teenage goalkeeper since Gigi Buffon, which is really cool.
All right. Any other news around MLS for the summer that we should be thinking
about? I want to ask one more.
Oh, go ahead.
Fall. Have you heard? We talked about him earlier.
Yeah.
We were going through and seeing with Chiellini coming in potentially for LAFC. Is there movement, interest, and like how serious is it that potentially would LAFC let him go for the right price, or would they look to try and keep him throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, LAFC, I think, have established, or they've at least been talking about a culture of developing players and moving them on, so I don't think that they would necessarily, you know, look to stand in his way if something came. I'd be surprised, I guess, if something came in the summer. I haven't really asked too many people about this, but, you know, I do know that there are a lot of teams in Europe that have had, you know, been keeping tabs on him. And, you know, there aren't that many teenage center backs that are playing in a top domestic league around the world. And obviously he'd been playing very well. There's going to be ups and downs at that position. He's still refining his game. But yeah, he's a big talent that a lot of teams in Europe are aware
also of. This is me adding to speculation. He is originally born in Senegal. There are some sorts of laws and stuff to help you get to France potentially. So he could be available for reasons that make it easier for him than just a normal American.
Good point.
Anything else you're hearing, thinking about, just have on the top of your Hey 2 monitor list ahead of this summer around MLS?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the Tati Castellanos stuff, the latest that was coming out. Apparently West Ham are in from now. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of how that develops and where he ends up. I'd be surprised if he doesn't leave this summer, but, you know, I was very surprised that he didn't leave in the winter, so who knows? There's a lot of things. Jaquiel Marshall-Reddy is another name that I'm going to keep an eye on. Like, Liverpool and Arsenal is where he trained in the winter. I know that, you know, a bunch of big clubs are super interested in him. So I was talking to somebody in Toronto in the offseason that they said, yeah, you know, we could probably get like $8 or $10 million for him right now if we wanted to, but we don't want to sell him right now. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how that kind of progresses. They view him as a wing back in Europe. That's why it works out super well that Bob Bradley turned him into a right back at the beginning of the season before he got hurt. So yeah, that's another one. I know a lot of clubs are watching Paxton Aronson, Red Bull Salzburg chief among them, which would be fun if they took the Brendan Aronson money and then just went to Philly and bought his younger brother. I don't know if something will happen this summer or not. Philly are trying really hard to keep him for longer, but look, there are a lot of teams that are in for him, and we'll see how that goes. And lastly, you know, not exactly MLS, but with Venezia getting relegated to Serie B, Gianluca Busio's future is one to watch, and a bonus one for Venezia. They have been very interested in Portland Timbers manager Gio Savarese. They have not contacted the Timbers about for permission to speak to Savarese, so nothing's new there yet. He's under contract for another year and a half, so if something progressed to the point where Portland would be okay with him leaving, they would have to be compensated by Venezia for Savarese. Again, this is all way down the road. Right now, we're just in interest stage.
All right, let's talk USMNT roster. No Gago Sanina there, but big news. Sanina committing to the U.S., I think between now and our last show. Anybody have thoughts on that? I mean, I'm happy for him to have made a decision to do what he felt was best for him, to do what he felt, as he said in his statement, that was sort of in his heart. He had a lot of push and pull there. Obviously, the Polish Federation coming out to Chicago, doing the full court press on him. And I think Greg Berhalter and his staff has shown a really good capability for sort of meeting people on a human level and just saying, hey, you make the best decision for you. You explore all the options you can. And if the U.S. is the one that you want to take, we are here and we're ready to bring you into the fold. He's not in this USMNT roster. And I think Greg said form was the reason why. That's understandable. Again, he's a 17-year-old goalkeeper. you know, he has a lot of growing to do, and sometimes removing distractions can be the best way to grow. Any thoughts on Gaga or the roster here? I mean, it's sort of the guys that you would expect. There's nobody, no crazy additions. I mean, you could point to Cameron Carter-Vickers, who had a great season at Celtic. You can say, okay, Eric Palmer-Brown, but he's been in. Those two seem like guys that'll compete for a spot that Miles Robinson would have filled. Joe Scally is here, so maybe some of the very vocal folks on Twitter can quiet down for just a little while, but they won't because there are some players from MLS rosters on this team. Georgie's in, which is a great thing. Malik Tillman, obviously, which I don't think we've talked about from Bayern Munich or Bayern Munich 2, whichever you want to define there. But this is sort of the guys that you would expect to be there. This is a camp not to only see new faces, but to integrate a few new faces while getting more reps for the guys that, you know, that Greg trusts and knows and will likely be considering for that 23-man roster.
Yeah, I would say, and I think most people would agree, outside of maybe Malik Tillman, there are no names on the roster that are surprising. It's more the people left off, right? Like, what was the limit? How many guys were you going to call? And I think for all of what I've read and talked to people about and talked about myself coming into it, there were more names that I thought we could see, rather than saying anyone here is surprising or doesn't make sense or there's not reasoning behind it. I mean, we basically knew Cameron Carter-Vickers was coming in because Greg said it a few weeks ago. I think we all expected Joe Scally to come in for the reasons he's talked about. Haji Wright has scored the goals. He deserves to be there. So Malik Tillman's really the only surprise. I just thought with the position at where it's at and Giassi Zardes injured, that Jeremy Bobosi or Brandon Vasquez would get a look. Just bring him into camp. I don't know what the loss is. I understand saying you want people to earn their spot, but I mean, no offense, has Malik Tillman earned his spot?
My only thoughts I had is that Weeby started this by saying, "Hey guys, what do you think your thoughts are?" And then called an ISO for himself and went on a 3.5 minute.
Welcome to
ETR. I would have passed you the ball right back if you asked for it.
Look, James Harden doesn't. He doesn't. He's not throwing it to you, man. I'm a chuck bricks. I'm gonna put out lists. I'm gonna do what I gotta do.
It wasn't a brick. You hit it. That's okay. The thing. I would have thrown it right
look,
back.
I get frustrated with people that are like, well, why wouldn't he overturn every rock? I do agree with you, Dave. That like an Obobese, a Vasquez, that'd be interesting because that position is so wide open. You know, but maybe for Greg it isn't. Maybe he's like, it's Ferreira, it's Pepe, and I'm looking for one or two guys at the very most. And I think Haji Wright. It is a better option for me there. But like at this point in the process, you're not going out and trying to find 5, 6, 7 new guys. It's maybe one or two guys that haven't been a part of the team up until now that qualified for the World Cup. You need to be building even more chemistry, cohesion. You're building toward 3 games. Like you have to have guys that are experienced together, that understand the relationships on the field, that understand what the plan is and how to execute it, that have been through some stuff before together. Like it doesn't make sense to me, people that are clamoring for all these dudes that just haven't been there. That's not what these Nation League games should be about. That's not what these friendlies should be about. It should be about fine-tuning, honing, and making sure that you're in the best possible position to make the best decisions possible for the 23-man roster for the World Cup. And that doesn't mean overturning every single rock. That's my rant. James Harden to the rim. Give me the free throws. Let's go. All right, that's it. Any other thoughts on the USMNT roster or these Nations League games? We're going to do some watch-along shows for all of them, Canada as well, folks. So I think those will be a Twitch and YouTube Live. We have special guests lined up. Should be a really good time between the likes of DeMarcus Beasley and many others that we're currently booking. So be ready for that.
I will say this last thing. If you want one more, Weeby, I know you wanted one more. Canada didn't have Marcelo Flores choose Canada. He went to Mexico. He got called up to Mexico when he... was not a professional player yet. The U.S. is calling Malik Tillman up. What I'm saying is Canada is the only real men's soccer program in all of CONCACAF. Everyone else is amateur.
And that's a capper for that one. Mailbag time, 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. It's all Kalen Carr. We'll keep you along for the ride, Tom. From Z, I just graduated from Cal with a degree in biochem. Can I get a Go Bears from Kalen?
Hell yeah, go Bears, man.
Yeah, there we go. Z is all about
Let's go on
the Kalen Carr train. And then BK says, extra time, gents. Thanks for the great show and content twice a week. First, apologies. I must confess, I didn't follow or listen to your show regularly until last year because Kalen's voice is so similar to Landon Donovan that I thought Landon was on the show, and my deepest apologies, but LD has annoyed me for decades. Maybe it's a character flaw. I'm working on it, I hope. Since I got that solved and I can delineate between Kalen and Landon Donovan, I've been listening regularly for the last year and enjoy the content. Sorry, Kalen.
How long was that tweet thread?
It was an email.
That wasn't a tweet thread. That was an email. Yeah,
that's okay. Incredible. BK that's
took
incredible.
BK took the time to get in the email on that one. So, what do you think about being compared to Landon Donovan from a vocal perspective?
One, that's an incredible email. Two, Landon Donovan has been annoying me for decades as well. Well, he was actually, I was actually a big fan of him until he broke my heart so many times. Three, I'm looking at this more as an opportunity where maybe I can actually start doing like podcast interviews as like a stunt double, of like a vocal stunt double to Landon.
Give him a break on the course.
Learn a whole
like
new...
The World Cup's coming up. He's not going to be able to do every paid appearance possible, right? He's going to need someone to step in.
Yeah, he says no to some of them, right?
All the time. I'm sure he said no to extra time, right? At some point.
Yeah, that's,
many times.
Yes.
I think... Kalen, here's my thing. You learn a third language because he already speaks Spanish, and you become the Landon Donovan dub in French or Mandarin or something like that. So now, when they need Landon Donovan stuff, you step in.
Where did Landon take his sabbatical back in the day?
Thailand? Where? Philippines?
Cambodia? Yeah.
Cambodia?
Wait, what was the other character he played in that commercial he did? It was like...
Donovan.
Yeah.
See?
You got that
insurance money coming your way, man. Also, BK hit us up and he just said, look, he thinks Almada, Araujo, Cisneros, and Moreno is a really good front four and is going to drag Atlanta into the playoffs. We agreed in our segment there. And he wants us to ink Jesus Ferreira as the USMNT number nine. Eric Erickson finishes off with the Kalen love. Can you change the name of your fantasy team midseason? No idea. Anders might know. I think
you can.
If so, I want to change it to Kalen's quote the other day when Weeby was talking about Vasquez and team chemistry with the USMNT. Quote, if you score goals, you'll be friends with everybody. Love it. Keep up the great work. And if a t-shirt is lying around, send it my way. Still got this Austin t-shirt, folks. Haven't got a good offer on that. And I think that's going to bring us to the end of the show.
I'm surprised you didn't take Austin for the shield.
That's not the way that relationship works. I guess that could have been a good reverse troll, but Austin fans know. We got a good, our chemistry is good right now. All right, that's good. It for us. Hit us up. You know how to get at us at Extra Time on Twitter, 401-206-0MLS if you'd like to text. Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Big thanks to Tom for putting Dave literally under the table. One of the better moments on this show in recent past. We're out of here. Adios.